Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to the Red Box Politics Podcast on The Times. I'm Matt Chorley at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster, where we're recording a special Times Plus event for Times subscribers, Brexit Tamed Live. In this, the final episode from the event, we ask, where are we going? What comes after Brexit? Can we put politics back together again? And what would we have been talking about if Britain voted Remain? For this panel, I was joined by The Times defence correspondent Lucy Fisher, columnist Hugo Rifkin and Satnam Sanghera, and Katie Perrier, who was Theresa May's Director of Communications.
It's all going very well, isn't it, Katie?
It's all going brilliantly. Very smooth.
For people who don't know, you worked for Theresa May when she was good. These things are all relative. In that bit in 2016 to 2017, and she called the election and you thought, nah.
She was 24 points ahead in the polls when I left, and I thought about getting a tattoo afterwards to kind of just say, or set up a company, and people said, no, the number 24, and people saying, why did you name a company 24 points? And then I could explain it was all going fine until we left. But no, I mean, it was about that social mobility kind of campaign. It was about what she said on the steps of number 10 Downing Street. But what we found over the time, although she was dealt a really bad hand, and she's done her best. She's a public leader and a kind of public servant. At the end of the day, what we really have is someone that's just not cut up to the job, because she don't really have the skill set that is needed to charm her way through those European leaders, charm her way through the Conservative Party to try and get everybody together and get over the line. I still think that we might get there.
But I said she was rubbish before the election. The first and last prediction I've ever got right. So there's been a lot of people who feel sorry for her, yeah, and how stoic she's been, as if she accidentally became Prime Minister and has just kept going with it, like a direct debit that she can't cancel. But
she actually promised to get rid of those direct debits, by the way. That was one of the things I signed up to.
That was one of the things she did.
Yeah, broadband contracts and gym memberships.
The question that I think that people, normal people, not you, normal people, normal people who ask, who aren't that into politics, ask, how on earth has she ended up as Prime Minister, given the fact that she seems to be fundamentally useless at every part of the job?
Harsh. That is harsh. I'm kind of torn, because in some ways I do defend Theresa May in the fact that she, you know, you're almost kind of painting a picture of someone that's kind of evilly sitting there plotting their way through things. If only. You know, that's not the case. She is
just
that
sitting,
kind of,
you know,
lifelong public servant and everything. I remember one of the moments at number 10 that just kind of shocked me. There were many, and you can read about them in the Times. There was a moment where people were walking into my office and barking orders and saying, the Prime Minister wants this, the Prime Minister wants that. And it took me a good month, kind of 6 weeks, to work out that probably the Prime Minister doesn't want any of those things, because she hasn't given those orders at all. So after a while of being very annoyed that I was doing all these things and not having any clue really whether or not the Prime Minister wanted those things to happen, I thought, well, if you can't beat them, join them. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to start going around saying the Prime Minister wants this and the Prime Minister wants that. And it worked for a while until everybody started doing that and it was utter chaos. But, you know, that does kind of give a kind of brief glimpse into what it can be like at number 10, where if you don't have strong leadership and you don't have someone that makes it very clear what they want to see achieve, then you're going to have failure. And there are only so many times, I wrote in the Times newspaper this week, there are only so many times you can blame the advisers.
Lucy, the good thing is that despite all the problems on the Tory side, the opposition has got a successful, principled, effective leader who's really striking out and showing it, Theresa May, how it's done.
Well, it's very easy to criticise Jeremy Corbyn, but what I will say is, but if you look back at why the country voted for such extreme change, I mean, many people highlight the sociological factors, immigration, communities changing very quickly in some parts of the country. I personally put more emphasis on the economic factors. And to my mind, the Brexit vote was largely motivated by a lag in anger from the global financial crash that led to squeezed wages, stagnated wages, squeezed families, austerity that has decimated many public services. And on that analysis, I actually think what Jeremy Corbyn's offering, it didn't surprise me as much as some other people's, that a more left-wing agenda talking about vast investment back into public services, whether it's economically literate or not, it didn't surprise me that's been very popular.
I suppose we should talk about the B word. So you are from Wolverhampton. You quite often write about Wolverhampton in your notebook and your column in the Times, which is a massive Leave voting area.
Yeah, my uncle John Al voted Leave on the grounds that he hated all the Muslims.
I suspect he wasn't alone.
No.
There could be sometimes in the sort of London Westminster metropolitan bubble, there's this sort of dismissive view of people who voted Leave. What is it that people, why do people in Wolverhampton vote Leave?
Well, I think more than that, I live between two extreme places. So I live in North London, very Remain. Anyway, I am in London and Wolverhampton, which is very, very Leave. The one thing that really strikes me living between the two places is that no one, not one single politician has stood up and said, you know what, it's a really close vote. Both sides have very good points. I'm going to try to navigate it in the middle. Instead, you get Theresa May making that bizarre statement last week, saying, you know, I'm going to be even more Brexit than ever. What we need is people trying to plug the gap between the two, and almost no one's doing it. I've seen a few examples on Twitter of people trying to do it. There's Martha Gill, who writes for The Times occasionally, and she said, what the people's vote should do is say, look, if we win, we're going to put all the money we save into Leave areas. Like, things like that, I think, might start the division, but we're not there yet, are we? I mean, no one is trying to plug the divide. People are just fighting.
Hugo, talking about Twitter, I wonder if you've got a good metaphor for Brexit that you'd like to share with everyone.
Right. So, how long have I been at The Times? 15, 16 years? Nothing I have written or probably will ever write has had the impact of a tweet I sent while sitting on the landing in our house while my kids were in the bath. And what it was just after Theresa May had brought her deal back, and it was rubbish. And I was trying to think of an analogy for something that was just sort of a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. But it was terrible, but because it was a terrible idea and couldn't possibly have been done better, and so there was no point in attacking it, saying it could have been done better because the idea itself was so fundamentally terrible, but possible. And so I came up with the idea of building a submarine out of cheese. And it sounds like nonsense. It is nonsense. It went bizarrely viral on Twitter. Within a day, I was being interviewed on MSNBC in America about it. It went into pretty much newspapers in pretty much every country in Europe in different ways. Someone read out the whole Twitter thread in the German Bundestag a fortnight later. Nobody laughed. Doesn't work in Germany. And I've now got it on a T-shirt and wore it on the march on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I'm disappointed you're not wearing it now.
I forgot.
We should all have them. I'm sure there's a lot of merch there. Right, let's do the thing we're supposed to be doing. Let's try and imagine that somehow we get through the next week or the next month, or at some point we stop talking about Brexit every 2 minutes. Are we going to find that the political system is broken? It looks like the only way out, even if a deal gets through, it looks like the only way out of it is a general election in which the two main parties are split down the middle on lots of issues, not just on Brexit. Are we heading for a big political explosion, Katie?
There is a feeling that something has to change, because there is a possibility that if we do go down that, you know, that journey of a general election, then just re-electing the same kind of people doing the same kind of thing, and they might just look a little bit different or sound a little bit different, but inherently the same thing. I don't think the public want that anymore. And so either they need to change, and one of the things that Theresa May always says is about, you know, if you protect something and you want something and you want to keep it, then you need to reform it. And she hasn't done that herself. But in terms of the party, maybe the offer, the kind of, we talked earlier about that negative campaigning, the driven by fear. Well, you know, maybe the public is now saying we want to be driven by hope and about promise and what can be done. And I do worry that long past whatever deal we end up getting through into the future, the cultural problems around Brexit in terms of how we are seen around the world, how we see each other, the opportunities in the UK for, you know, our children. I've got two boys that are 9 and 6, and, you know, I want them to have that optimistic future. I do worry that we are just bashing it over the head on a daily basis, and someone needs to go, well, I'm going to break from that. And it's not Jeremy Corbyn in the Labour Party, and it's certainly not the Conservative Party right now, who should never have owned Brexit in the way that it has, should never have taken one side of the argument only, and should have actually tried to go through with a consensus, trying to unite the country over such a division, rather than kind of trying to opt for one thing and going hell for leather on it. And so I think that there is a moment coming. I don't know quite what it looks like. I don't necessarily think it's Chukwuemunu or anyone else, but there is something that's got to happen.
Do you think Theresa May might end up being the last Tory Prime Minister?
No.
Do you think the Tory Party is so all over the place on everything at the moment? I mean, they don't just disagree on Brexit. They hate each other, they brief against each other. I mean, even the ERG, the subset of a group of Brexiteers, are at loggerheads as well. I mean, I don't know how anyone brings that back together.
I think that, unfortunately, we may see a bit more of that before it comes to its end.
Oh, good.
But what we will see is that time and time again, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I would agree with you if the Labour Party had its act together. So if there was anyone but Jeremy Corbyn running the Labour Party right now, the Tory Party would be finished for a generation.
What do you think, Satnam? How do we put the country back together?
Well, actually, one of my favourite quotes about the hopelessness of British politics used to be, actually, I used to think Hugo Rifkin wrote this, but
let's say it.
he always denies it.
Probably got it on a T-shirt. Anyway.
Maybe I came up with this, and it was all politics leads you to the Lib Dems, and the Lib Dems lead you to Dignitas. And and that was
me.
Was that you?
Yeah,
I think it was me.
I'll take it.
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
And that was before Brexit. And with Brexit, I think if you've got a general election between two discredited Brexit positions between the Tory Party and the Labour Party, that's going to be awful. But it seems to me a people's vote is going to be awful too, because what if they win by 55%? That's not going to change the argument. It's going to make things even worse. And I think the best thing we can hope for is just for a lot of time to pass before a decision is taken, which is what seems to be happening.
Yeah.
One thing on that, though, really quickly, is that just because we think our parliamentary system might be broken and our political parties, there are an overwhelming majority of parliamentarians that go to work every day that are decent people, and they want to do the right thing, and they find more in common together across the parties than they've ever done before. In fact, this has encouraged people to work together in a way that they've not done before, because we don't like you because you're Labour, we don't like you because you're Tory. And so maybe that there is a way forward with so many of those decent people, because what I don't want people thinking is that, well, you know, politics is broken, they're all scumbags. They're not. And that's something worth saying, I think.
I think although it's really hard, we need to get away even from asking the question, how do we put things back to normal, back how they were? Things aren't going back to normal. For a start, this is a 100-year war. This is going to go on and on. It doesn't stop when we leave. Don't be mad. But more than that, what Brexit really was, we talk about elites a lot. Actually, Brexit was a kind of revolution against the idea of representative democracy. against the idea of we choose people, or they make the decisions, we just put up with it and do what they take. Now, I mean, I say we, I think that's a great idea, but, you know, people don't. But that's like a global thing. That's kind of happening everywhere. And I sort of think there'll be similar things to Brexit across the world. We may look back in 50 years' time and decide that we in Britain actually got off quite lightly, that we did it in a relatively contained way, like Britain often does massive changes that sweep across the world. We do in a relatively contained way, while the French go nuts and chop people's heads off. You know,
are they doing that now?
They will be, given a month.
Yellow vest thing's taking a turn.
Well, that's great. They've got yellow vests on both sides now.
Just high
Some of them need a different vest. Yeah.
Who knew George Osborne was at the forefront of a revolution? While we're talking about the rest of the world, Lucy, while Westminster is completely obsessed on the minutiae of what Marc Francois thinks, out there there's a world going on. And Britain used to lead the world and, you know, it was a global superpower. Is that, given in your day job of covering defence, is that changing? Are we sort of dropping down off the top table?
Well, I think in many ways we are, because we've been so inward-looking for several years now. We've had the sort of sloganeering of global Britain and the embarrassing sort of nickname Empire 2.0 that's come out of the Department for International Trade. But a recent report by the UN Association sort of picked up a lot of anger in the UN that the UK isn't stepping up to its responsibility, its sort of permanent seat on the Security Council. NATO's foundering amid Trump's ambivalence, and all the time the threat picture is pretty much getting worse for the West. We've got the acute threat of Russia, the chronic threat of China, and as well as the defence and security piece around that we're not really engaging with in a sort of forward-thinking, innovative way. There's obviously the other side of the coin, which is prosperity. The Indo-Pacific is the fastest growing region. There are important kind of shipping routes there that we need to kind of secure our access to. And I just sort of worry that we're not kind of thinking about these things at all on Whitehall, all the bandwidths sort of taken up by Brexit.
You're listening to the Red Box podcast and The Times. Still to come, more from this panel at the special Times Plus event, Brexit Tame Live. We'll be back after this short break.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what would we be talking about right now?
This Anything. Is why I brought well, my notes.
You've brought some notes.
Yeah. Because you said, when you think about what we could be talking about instead of Brexit, I've got 15 pages of notes here. You know.
Are they all things in Wolverhampton?
Wolverhampton Wanderers. Yeah, battered chips. Yeah, knife crime, climate change. You know, there's millions of things. Teaching. We're not talking about anything except bloody Brexit. But it seems to be selling tickets. Maybe it's good.
People are now clapping, thinking, yeah, I've bought tickets for this. Why did I do that?
It's fascinating to think, if Brexit wasn't happening, where we'd be now would be in the last year of the Cameron government, right? You'd have Cameron's still there, Osborne would still be there. Who knows what would be happening with the economy, whether it'd be going up or down. Probably it'd be a bit healthier than it was. You've got to think back to Cameron's last party conference, after he won his majority, where his whole speech was about, we are now the centrist party. And Theresa May made her speech, her anti-immigration speech, and everyone was like, well, she's finished. You know, and that was the kind of the trajectory we were on. It's a bit like when I sort of think back, when you think back to like Ed Miliband running for election and how sort of sneering and dismissive I was about the idea of him being prime minister, and I sort of feel a bit like Joni Mitchell. You know, like you don't know what you've got till it's gone. You know, you look back, it would be. But yeah, I think it's sort of fascinating to think where we'd be if Cameron and Osborne were still there. What would we think of them? What would have happened to Jeremy Corbyn?
Can I just jump in on that? I mean, in particular, the sort of horrible irony to my mind is that many areas that voted leave are the left behind communities who are going to be the worst served by the abandonment of the Northern Powerhouse, the Midlands Engine, if anyone remembers that as a thing, for the devolution.
And that is true. I mean, one of the most frustrating things about the obsession with Brexit is a lot of the reasons that people voted leave, whether it's because their high streets were crap or their factories were closing or they couldn't get well-paid work or move to automation work, none of that is being addressed.
And nothing I've heard from any Brexiteer has told me that has promised me that that's going to change. In fact, if investors from the UK decide to go elsewhere, if car manufacturers decide to go elsewhere, they're going to be doubly done, quite frankly. And so I'm very concerned about those people because, you know, they voted a certain way, and I will never criticise the way they voted because I totally understand why they did that. However, if they're not best served by this and it's actually not as good, is it because we didn't have a true Brexit and it was betrayal? Or is it because it was fantasy land that was never going to be delivered? And then what do they think of their politicians? And then how are they tuned out of what's going on in the country and they won't ever vote again? And they are, you know, they are telling their children never to vote again, and how all politicians do is let you down. I think it's quite a poisonous cycle that we could get into in the next couple of years, where all of that faith, the very little that is left, is utterly destroyed.
But you just need to cheer up, Katie, because if only Theresa May was more like Moses, it would all be fine, apparently, in the random Brexit metaphor generator that is...
40 years in the desert living off bread.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the locusts are coming. Maybe we can eat them.
There's a massive growth in insects. The world is eating insects. I'm thinking about investing in them. So
yeah,
maybe we should all do that.
Start stockpiling.
Yeah,
stockpiling
insects.
There we are. Start stockpiling insects.
They kind of stockpile themselves, if you play it right.
That is true. That is true. Right, just before we wind up, and I didn't warn you of this, but we've got a minute left. Where do you think we're going to be at the end of the year? Who's Prime Minister? Are we in or out of the EU? Are we still just going to basically be sat here still talking about Theresa May's going to have one more go next week? She really thinks this time she's going to get it over the line. Lucy, let's start with you.
It's incredibly annoying when people say they don't want to be a hostage to fortune, so I will say I think Jeremy Corbyn will be Prime Minister.
Wow. Ooh. You wait, they'll all come for you. Corbynistas won't like that. Hugo?
I mean, what Theresa May is really, really, really good at, there is a thing, it's getting to the end of the day. She's really, really good at getting to the end of the day. Throughout her prime ministership, every day so far, she's got to the end of the day.
Really
and
good.
I can actually see a year from now, 4 years from now, 50 years from now, she'll still just be getting to the end of the... Nothing will have happened. No. It'll be exactly like this now. We're going to be 4 days from Brexit forever.
I'm slightly fearing we're not going to send people off with a song in their hearts that we were hoping for. Satnam, where are we going to be at the end of the year?
I think Wolverhampton Wanderers are going to win the FA Cup. And Sajid Javid will be Prime Minister.
Oh, OK. You did a very good interview with him in the Times magazine.
Yeah, I didn't like him. I don't know why I'm saying that.
You didn't like him?
No.
I think we've given up liking politicians.
Yeah,
we're tolerating
them.
It's like...
You don't like anyone you interview. I've noticed that.
Yeah, it's the thing, isn't it? Maybe it's me.
No. If you follow Theresa May's thing, it's definitely not you. It's them. Deal or no deal, she's gone.
Yeah. Christmas at Chequers is no happening.
No. Chicken lasagna and boiled potatoes, you can keep it.
That's one of my favourite stories about Theresa May. When she was plotting her general election at Chequers, she invited her advisors round and served them chicken lasagna and boiled potatoes.
She's never heard of onion bhaji.
No. And I think that's the most Theresa May.
That is very
dish.
Theresa May. Just not
beige,
the fact that she would have
bland,
chosen it.
Stodgy.
The fact that someone would have said, "This is the menu," and she would have gone, "Oh, that's nice." She wouldn't have gone, "That sounds crap. I want a different, you know, I want a different menu." But she would have just said, "Okay, fine." And that is, in a nutshell, where it's gone wrong.
There we are. Theresa May and boiled potatoes. Right, I've forgotten this. We've got 5 minutes for three questions. So, if you think we can offer any insight whatsoever, pop your hand up and we'll get a microphone to you. There we are.
I'm from Grimsby. 70% of people voted Leave. I would have voted Remain, but I'm not old enough. I am now, fortunately. So, my question really is, what can politicians do to recover the trust of people in Grimsby who are so disenfranchised and so fed up with politicians? Thank you.
You know what's really missing? I miss it, just someone with some charisma.
What, here?
Yeah. you in particular. You know what I mean? I think more than anything, people are kind of trying to work out what the solution is to Brexit politically, but it just takes one person with charisma to persuade people. And it seems to be utterly lacking. There's no one on the scene that you look at and you think, they could do it.
Lucy?
I think it takes a bit more than personality and energy. I just think we need policies, you know. The social care question needs solving. You mentioned knife crime, climate change, housing, rebalancing the economy, dealing with the fourth industrial revolution that's coming and how automation is going to change the employment outlook. I mean, anyone who can sort of start to address those questions, I think maybe has a hope in hell.
Is it... I'm not sure if that was a name that's a tune or Hugo, is it a bit like the old Ed Miliband adage of under promise and over deliver, that actually promising to do a little bit about a few things is better than these sort of slightly mad claims which are made now?
I mean, I guess it's just doing the work. It takes money. That's what it takes. It takes tax and it takes money. I mean, I always think when we talk about these sort of these areas in Britain that are struggling, you go back 20 years, 25 years, there were areas in Britain that were struggling. They were inner cities. They were inner city London. Inner city London's like transformed in a quarter of a century by money, money into schools, money into business, investment. It's a wonderful place to live now. You know, it can be done. It's just money. It's just raising the money and spending the money. That's it.
It's also attracting it from elsewhere. So if you do have a dying car manufacturing industry, then you tap up the biggest drone manufacturers in the world and you say, look, we've got really good skilled people here. Come here and we will give you investment and we'll give you R&D money and we will attract you here. And that's what the industrial strategy was meant to do. It was meant to not necessarily pick winners, but highlight where are we going in the next 20 to 30, 40 years and back those industries and back those employment opportunities. And that seems to have fizzled out because Brexit's taken over again and sucked the bandwidth out. And if you speak to anybody in the business department in government, they are being inundated. No wonder Richard Harrington resigned, because they are inundated on a minute-by-minute basis from some business somewhere in the UK saying, just the uncertainty alone is killing us. It's not even about what deal you're going to end up with now. It's the uncertainty that's just, we can't cope with it any longer. And I think that whatever happens, we need to kind of understand that Just having a path to follow will be better than no path at the moment.
OK, we've got time for one... Well, we haven't got time, but I'm going to have one anyway. One more question. Make it a cracker.
Well, Hugo mentioned an alternate history, and if Ed Miliband could eat a bacon sandwich, the world might be a very different place. So my question is, how contingent has all this been, or was it always inevitable that Brexit would one day be a complete disaster hitting us?
I think this was always going to happen. Because I did A-level politics, right? And I remember... I remember one of the essay questions, we had 3 hours to answer this question, and it was two words. It was, whither Europe? ? And it's possessed us before Brexit, and it's going to possess us forevermore. Have I answered the question, or haven't I?
No, well, it's all right. I'm not here to judge, Katie.
No, I think that... what we've seen in certain things like general elections, so Theresa May starts off with a 24-point lead, and then over 6 weeks, it kind of comes down to pretty much nothing. And you can see how things move so quickly in politics. You know, I've been on stage with Matt Chorley, and I've sat here and gone, we're looking at absolutely 80-seat majority. And Matt's kind of got one eyebrow up, looking at me going like, yeah, right.
I remember that. It was two days before the election.
It was. Yeah. And I'd already revised it down from 100. So I was, and every time someone asked me, I thought, 70, 60, 50, you know, just kept on changing my mind the whole time as kind of confidence left. But this is how quickly things can change. I don't think this was inevitable. Sure, Brexit was always, or Europe was always going to be a massive problem within the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, because whenever you put a spotlight on both, you do see those problems, the historical problems. But we didn't need to end up in this way. And that's why, you know, despite being a good Prime Minister in many different ways, David Cameron will always have that legacy, because it didn't need to end up like this.
Although Theresa May is giving him a run for his money in that particular league table. Hugo, was this always inevitable?
Well, I mean, it depends what this is. I mean, there was not a way of doing Brexit well. There were ways that Brexit could have been done better than it's been done. But any Brexit is in all the challenges that Brexit sets itself, any Brexit is worse than the status quo. That's just a sort of inevitable problem, really. And it's almost a problem that it's a problem. A lot of what Ian Duncan Smith was saying about, you know, we were being increasingly more bound into Europe in a way that people hadn't necessarily consented to. That's kind of true, but it doesn't change the facts of where we are now. So I think Brexit, as once we'd had the referendum, this is always where we were headed. The referendum itself, yeah, it could have gone another way if we'd not had it. But that's the best I've got.
Lucy, finally for you.
All I'll say is I pity the unborn generations who will have to answer A-level history questions about Brexit in future.
I think you should pity those of us who are still writing about it every solid day. I'm sorry to say we've run out of time. I'm not sure we've answered any of your questions in any great way, but we've had fun trying. And if you can bear the idea of a whole evening with just me, I'm performing my one-man show, This Is Not Normal, on Wednesday, May the 29th at the Bloomsbury Theatre, with tickets on sale now at mytimesplus.co.uk. My huge thanks to all of our panellists, to Lucy Fisher, Hugo Rifkin, Satnam Sangeva. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, good night.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.